Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Kelly, did you get word on the outcome of the advertised main event on the show that just ended a few minutes ago?
I did not.
I mean, like when they play sports, do they usually have a final score and like tell you what the final score is because you invested time in the competition and you kind of want to know who won?
Yeah, I mean, I left to draw our own conclusions. It's like we went to a ballet show. It's like they don't necessarily tell you that it's like mourning a death. You got to figure that out on your own.
But Jeff Jarrett always says it's not ballet.
You know what? I'm sorry, Jeff.
Okay, this is going to be a problem, Paul Levesque, Triple H, Hunter. If you keep having matches that we get invested in, I'm sitting here for the duration of the match going, I'm curious what call they're going to make here. And are we going to get, is Drew going to beat him and that's going to be a setback and that's going to be a storyline, or is Drew going to lose two in a row? I didn't figure the finish would be completely clean. Because you have a debuting guy who's in the bloodline and you're trying to establish who he is, but you want to protect Drew. So it was a conundrum, and it turned out, he booked himself into a match that he didn't want to do a finish for. And I'm not okay with that. I mean, every once in a while, and maybe this should be the exception, but after Braun just interrupted on Monday, a tag team match going on, it's like twice in a week. And I mean, they each had their own purpose, but I mean, you're conditioning fans to not invest in the competition if every time you can't figure out who's going to win, or sometimes you're just, watching and Braun runs out, that kind of thing. If the announcers don't even make a big deal out of it, it's like, it doesn't matter that there wasn't a finish. We're just going to go off the air. Yeah, I want the announcers to be as disappointed as I am that I invested myself in something and it just ended. Like, if a football game just ends in the middle of the third quarter, you don't just go off the air, you explain what the heck's happening.
Yeah, this would have been a real interesting one for a non-fan to say, this is the first match I'm going to watch. Then it gets to the end. Somebody who's not in it runs in. It goes black and white for some reason.
Oh, I'm getting to that.
And
I'm actually more angry about that, but go ahead.
So am I. and then they don't actually announce the finish. We can assume that this is a disqualification win for Drew. And
Why? Karrion Kross isn't on the side of the bloodline. He's been bad-mouthing them.
Well, look, I guess that's true, too.
He didn't interfere to help anybody win. He just ruined the match. Kross should be suspended for a month for interrupting a match in progress that it's all about me, but I'm not alone, was invested in. That shouldn't just be something they just let happen. But apparently, Kelly, as you gave away a little earlier than I wanted to, the company's in on it with Karrion. They're
right.
In on it. They're co-conspirators because Karrion Kross got to have some cool special effect when he runs in and ruins a match. The screen goes to black and white, and they add some, whatever effect they did to make it seem like it was old movie footage or something. That is D-U-M-B. I'm not going to do S-T-O-O-P-I-D. But it's dumb. It's not what I want out of WWE or pro wrestling. I want to feel like the cameras are there to capture something that's happening that they don't have control over. I don't want to feel it's some production and we've got it all worked out ahead of time and you're just watching us impress you with these clever effects to try to help get Karrion Kross over. I'm angry about both things, as you can tell.
This is very much in the same bucket as run-ins with music. I loathe run-ins with music.
But they all have microchips. They all have microchips, right. And there's like a detector back at Gorilla, and when they run through it, their music starts.
Right.
I've talked myself into that so I don't pull my hair out.
And if you run faster, does it make it play like chipmunk speed? I would be all for that. oh, boy. Yeah, it's the run-in with music. That is
but
up
you know
there
what?
With
honestly,
my least favorite
I can,
trope.
I can,
Go ahead.
I'm with Kelly. I mean, I don't like that, and I think it's better if they didn't do it. I understand why they do it. And I've come to accept it.
Yeah, branding. I get it.
But the idea that there's somebody on the like at Gorilla backstage with, you know, like the whatever, all the setup. They're like, oh my God, Bronze went into the ring. Okay, push Bronze music. Like I can sort of rationalize that. You know, oh, Sammy's coming out. Let's play Sammy's music. You know, whatever it is, someone can just be quick and push a button. I can deal with that. But, like, the idea that Karrion Kross is interrupting a match in progress, and so let's add this, quote, cool, allegedly, special effect of everything going black and white, it's just, it's so put on. It's so phony. It's so, it's just too much. And it's just annoying. It doubles down that the promotion is just, you know, in on the finish and thinks it's spooky and cool that when he enters the ring, it goes black and white. There's no microchip that can explain that, Kelly.
No, and it so easily explains everything else. Yeah, it's I don't know. They're trying something with Kross, but when you lay it on this thick, this is what makes fans turn against it. And I don't know how much they can get out of Kross, period, in the main event spot on the main roster. I just don't. We talked very shortly after his return last time, and we were like, trying to find something good to say about it, but thinking, how much do you get out of this? And now, of course, we'll be talking about Braun too, but I guess I don't know what else to say about it here. I just think that more people will be – he feels like an interloper in the main event scene. Like he's in all these main event stories, but I keep forgetting he's there until he shows up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my praise of Paul Levesque after the first week or two is the number one thing that I thought he had going for him was the absence of irritants. You know, 24/7 was gone. I mean, there's just a list of things that Vince McMahon did that were annoying. You know, he's a great sports entertainer. No one says that anymore because it's one of the dumbest things that's ever been said in human history, calling a professional wrestler on a show purporting that's pretending to be professional wrestling and calling him a sports. It's like if you're watching Seinfeld, you can call him a stand-up comedian on the show. Well, he really is. But, you know, like, you can refer to the person on a TV show who's a doctor, even if they're not really a doctor, because they're playing a doctor. So in the show, people call them doctor. That's why in a pro wrestling show, you call them pro wrestlers, not sports entertainers, whatever that meant ever. So, and I don't have to rant about that anymore because Hunter's largely removed it.
You still got people accidentally saying performer.
Yeah.
But I think that's just stuff they've got to unlearn. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, you don't want to swing so far the other way where Hunter's like zapping people like the mailman on Cheers when he, what was the name?
Cliff Clavin.
Cliff Clavin. You know, they have a zapper when he starts going on one of his facts. Like,
yes, that story. I think that was a one episode gag, but I do remember. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, it stuck with me.
Right.
You know, so you don't want Hunter to be doing that, like zapping people when they, you know, start saying performer, but it would be good to get people to move away from it. So the absence of irritants was like the big thing he had going for him, along with, you know, using talent better. And now he's adding a whole, these irritants again, matches ending without conclusions. And again, if it happened and they made a big deal out of it, I'd be more forgiving, but they just act like nobody cares if that match had a finish. Who could care about that? It's more exciting. The screen went black and white magically and Karrion Kross interfered. Boy, what a cliffhanger. So I'm annoyed by that. All right. Go ahead. Yeah.
I was just going to say, there's going to be some things that hang around for a long time that are very much Vince-isms that people don't even think of as Vince-isms. And they just think that's the way wrestling has to be. They think that's the way these matches, if you're booked into a corner, that's the way it has to be. And I get the feeling like nobody really wants to challenge that. You got to have these multi-person matches and not explain why they're in the title hunt. They just are now. That's what all these wrestlers grew up watching and then grew up doing.
Yep.
And now they don't know another way.
And I just want common sense to take over instead of inertia and bad habits. You know, does it make sense to present a wrestling show, build up this, you know, main event that's got this backstory? I mean, that promo from Drew, that soft-spoken, dead serious promo was great. I want to see Drew take it to Sokoa. And I want to see how good Sokoa is. And what's going to happen here? And haha, just running.
Yeah.
And if Michael Cole and Corey Graves were as mad as me, I wouldn't be nearly as mad, but they're co-conspirators in kind of like pretending. It's like, well, We're just going to not be mad because we don't draw attention to it. So maybe you won't notice that you just invested in a main event match and we just had this trapdoor, cop-out, lame-ass finish that isn't satisfying, but because the screen was black and white, ooh, and now we're not going to talk about it because we don't want you to be mad. Well, we noticed and we're mad. All right. Let's pause. Let's introduce the show. We got a lot of people on hold. We'll cover more. There's good things about this show to talk about. There's a lot I want to talk to you about. Kelly with some NXT talent on the show, including we'll go back to Karrion Kross, some of the women, and Solo Sikoa. But first, let's introduce ourselves and the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, September 9th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program. Coincidentally, the podcast is named after me. And I'm the editor and publisher and founder of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, one of those dirt sheets that people refer to, and also the editor of pwtorch.com and the host of a variety of podcasts, these post-shows, the Wade Keller podcasts, including earlier this week, the flagship with Nick Houseman from Wrestling Inc., and we've got his firsthand perspective from being called out by CM Punk at that infamous Sunday post-pay-per-view press conference. Nick was the one that Punk went after. Verbally, and Nick sort of extinguished Punk's game plan pretty quickly, and we talked about how that went and his backstory with Punk, and that was a four-hour double episode of the flagship, and we took calls for 4 hours, dozens of calls of people calling about the turmoil in AEW. Eric Kroll joined me about an hour and a half in, and we finished taking calls during that show. So if you missed that and you want a lot of analysis on what the heck happened Sunday and what to expect going forward, that is waiting for you on our Blue Logo Show. Just search Wade Keller and subscribe to the Blue Logo Show. In addition to this, the Red Logo Show. I am the host, and the other voice here is the co-host tonight, and that is Kelly Wells from the PWT Talks NXT, PW Torch Daily Cast, and also the VIP exclusive NXT 8 Years Back podcast. And he also writes up reports every other week, along with Bruce Hazelwood, covering NXT on USA. Kelly, welcome.
That's me. My podcast is not named after me, but I have been on the most episodes, so it probably – I'm just going to start calling it the Kelly Wells Podcast, and we'll see if
it
takes.
Let's call it – what do you say in your in the promo that you cut that we run on the shows all the time a couple years ago? This is Kelly Wells and – me and my band of idiots or something.
Band
like
of idiots. Oh, I forgot that I actually said that on the ad.
Yep.
I get to listen ad-free, but I definitely call them my band of idiots or my usual gang of idiots.
So if you sense tension and resentment among your co-hosts, just realize something you did a couple years ago is still there, and they just.
Oh, I do that to those guys every week. Like, it's well within Nate's rights to resent me. So, you got to have punching bags. It's what life's all about.
Go ahead. Everybody, if you haven't yet subscribed to the PW Torch Daily Cast, it's crazy if you're not. There's so many good shows. Different show every day of the week. Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure will be free this Saturday. Check it out. They'll be talking about tonight's SmackDown and the fallout from Clash at the Castle. Well, they did last week, too, because they delayed their show a little bit. But they'll talk about the weekend wrestling, and maybe they'll be ranting, too. So check that out tomorrow. We've got lots of cool stuff, the 90s PW Torch Passcast, and show covering the indie wrestling scene and NXT and AEW and MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. Plus, starting off the week every week is Greg Parks hosting Wrestling Night in America, covering pro wrestling's biggest events. He had a double header last weekend, covering the Clash with a live call-in post-show, and then All Out with a live call-in post-show, which was what a weekend. So search PW Torch to subscribe to that for free. All right, Kelly, let's just get the calls. Let's roll through some conversation here. People are upset like I am. You can pile on, but absolutely feel free to steer us towards some other happenings on this show, some stuff with Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler, the return of Braun Strowman to SmackDown, the absence of Pat McAfee, Solo Sikoa joining the Bloodline with Sami Zayn with another great performance, Sheamus seeming like a full-fledged babyface, Butch morphing into Pete Dunne, and on. Lots of talking points here. If you want to join us, the number to call is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard and tells us that you want to be brought on to the show. You can also email us if that's easier for you. You can do it right now if you're listening, but that's also something to keep in mind if you're watching Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown next week or any week and you have something you want to contribute to the show, but you might not be able to call in live afterwards. That's a way for you to be part of the show. So that email address is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right. Let's get to calls, and we'll begin with a Skype or international call. I'm not sure who this is. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Wade, I just want to say to you, I enjoyed your coverage of the AEW cluster.
I know you're complimenting, but you got to state your name and city, or else you're breaking our rules.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Reverend Keith in Baltimore. I just wanted to praise your coverage of AEW.
Cool. What's your question, Keith? You're sneaky.
Yes. Well, I just wanted to say that give Triple H a chance. He's trying. I know tonight's finish was a little disappointing, but I do believe that they wanted to keep the heat on Solo Sikoa, being that this was his debut match. And I also believe that they're going to fast-track the feud between Drew and Karrion Kross. So that's another way of looking at it. What are your views on that?
Kelly, is there a better way to go about this, or was Paul Levesque left with a tough choice and he made the best choice, and I'm being totally unfair in being upset or an alarmist or overreacting to the ramifications of making at least making a habit out of this?
No, I think it's lazy, but it's also predictable. Like, it's a double whammy negative for me. When they came out, my wife saw – well, I kind of gave her the rundown at Clash at the Castle, and she knows Sikoa because she sometimes is in the room with me for NXT,
yeah.
and kind of knows how big of a deal Drew is. So she says, "What do they do here?" And I said, "Well,
good for her.
Booking 101 says it's a schmoz, and there's no winner, or Drew wins by disqualification." But I thought that indeed there are a multitude of other more interesting options. If they're going to drag this out for a couple of months, I think the best thing you can do is have Solo cheat somehow with help from, you got three guys out there to help him. So it's completely reasonable that the heels would cheat to win here. And then you give Drew a bigger hill to climb, or Solo gains a lot in a really hard fought even loss. And I think both of those elevate the feud and or Sikoa more than this finish. I just thought it's lazy and it's predictable. I feel like anybody who's watched wrestling for a long time would know this was coming and wouldn't even know there was a change at the top.
And I know they've got 52 weeks of main events to produce, you know, on SmackDown, 52 on Raw. And they want to draw ratings and they want to give you compelling matchups. But still, this chips away at people's willingness to invest in what you do. And it's not just that they did it. It's that they won't talk about it. You know, like when Gable and Otis came out and then Braun came out, the announcers weren't like, there was a match in progress. And say what you will about Braun wanted to make a statement, but I wanted to see who was going to win that match. Now, it might sound crazy because you're like, who cares about that match? Well, that's the problem. You don't care. You didn't care who won that four-way tag match when Braun interrupted, but you should. And part of the reason you don't is because WWE trains you not to think that the outcomes of matches aren't that important. Now, I'm not giving up on Paul Levesque. I am being critical of this decision. It is a hard call to make. It's a hard call to make. But either don't do the match or come up with a pinfall finish. But if you're going to do a run, and don't do stupid black and white crap, even if it looks cool, because it makes everything seem co-opted and produced in a way that takes you out of the moment. But have the announcers at least, and I wouldn't be upset, I wouldn't be nearly as upset if the announcers had said, that was a good match. We want to see what the outcome was. Karrion Kross has ruined that. You know, something along those lines. Own what you do and make it seem like the match should count. If you're watching a football game on Sunday and a third team runs on the field and just ruins everything, then they're not going to go off the air with the third team beating up players on both teams or one of the teams and not ever address it again and acting like, well, that's just the way things have to be. So it's not about giving up on Paul Levesque. It's about calling him out for booking himself into a corner and doing a logical finish if you're just into promoting storylines, but one with collateral damage. But yeah, you could have had Sokoa win because Sami Zayn made him proud, and then Drew lost twice, and that just enrages Drew more. You could have Sokoa lose because Sami interfered. I would absolutely take this. Sami tries to help Sokoa, or even better, Jay tries to help Sokoa or Jimmy because they wanted to be there. They didn't want Sami to get all the glory helping out, and it backfires, and Sokoa loses by DQ. I'll deal with a DQ finish with a storyline behind it because the Usos' interference backfires and the ref sees it and Sokoa's upset. Now Roman's going to have a talk with the Usos about their interference backfiring and costing Sokoa's first match, but at least there's an outcome and a storyline behind it. In this case, it's just a cop-out. Cross could have attacked Drew after the match. He didn't have to do it and just ruin the match. All right, let's keep rolling through calls, and we'll go to Mike in Atlantic City next. Thanks for calling, Mike. What's in your mind about SmackDown?
I thought it was a good show. I like the wrestling. And, one thing that Paul is doing really good that I like is, he's bringing back talent. The wrestling's better. Sometimes the matches go, like a caller said a couple weeks ago, sometimes the matches go too long. Like, I don't need every match to be 10 minutes, 15 minutes. I agreed with the person that said that a couple weeks ago. I like squash matches, which they do sometimes. Matches here and there and, 5-minute matches. We get them sometimes, and sometimes, we'll get shows where all the matches, I think, are too long because it's every match that's going the same time length. But, yeah, overall, it was a good show. I like the women's matches. To continue on about Cross, the finish, I'm not as mad about it as you are, Wade, because to me it was predictable. I knew Cross was going to get involved in the end because I know they're setting up Drew versus Cross at Extreme Rules. So I saw this coming. So But I know what
you mean.
Well, that's the thing.
I just don't think we should. We have a new era going here. You know what I mean? Like with Paul Levesque. And that's why if this was Vince McMahon, I'd complain. I'd point out, I think this is counterproductive to getting fans invested in matches if you're conditioning them now to believe that when there's a match where they can't imagine who's going to win, the answer is we're not going to have a finish and we're going to go off the air. I think that's more costly than doing at least a DQ finish, at least have the announcers act as outraged as a fan should be and own what you do. All the things I've said. But it's a new era, and I've complimented Paul Levesque for the absence of irritants, and now he's got some bad habits going, or at least he's going to, and I just think if we just resign ourselves to it, we're resigning ourselves to accepting something because it's been done before and we're used to it. And I just don't think we should lower our standards to acceptance of something counterproductive and deflating that they do rather than being brave bookers and booking finishes to the matches that they put on television. You deserve better, Mike. That's my point.
Oh, yeah, I agree. That always bothered me during the Vince era, too, is, there's so much interference. I always got pissed at a lot of that, too, where we just didn't see a clean winner, and it just seems like they would only do clean winners at pay-per-views. So I know what you mean, Wade. I was just expecting Cross to interfere. I knew he was coming out at the end to set this thing up with Drew. But I do think Drew versus Cross will be a war. I think it'll be a great match, and it'll be a test for Cross. And we'll see, Wade, if I'm intrigued by if he'll take a lot of bumps in this match. In my opinion, he will. I think it'll probably be some kind of stip to the match at Extreme Rules. I'm guessing that'll be an Extreme Rules match. And I think it'll be a great match. What do you guys think? And who do you think goes over? I'm not a fan of that either, Wade. I think that's stupid, especially because I want to see Scarlett. She's pretty, and I can't see her when it's black and white. So that bothers me.
Yeah, maybe in the match, Kelly, at Extreme Rules, it'll be extremely black and white, and that'll be why it's so cool.
If they could make it so just Cross was in black and white, I wouldn't even be mad. I'd just be like, that's impressive. I think...
Clear. You're right.
Right, yeah, right, of course. I think that this could be This could be good. You're right that it will be a test for Cross. I think the biggest test is how big can he make himself look? Because this is a size mismatch, Drew and Cross. So they've done pretty well with it so far because they haven't had like that face-to-face moment really. But I'm interested to see what this is going to look like in a match setting. And I'm also interested to see how does Cross get booked? Because I don't know if he's going to be, he could be just like one and done in the main event scene. I'm very, very interested to see how he's booked and how Paul really, really thinks how high his ceiling is for Cross.
I think it's
me too.
Not decided. I think that so it's going to come down to how Karrion Kross performs. Kelly, talk about Karrion Kross in NXT. Talk about him now and what his strengths are, what his weaknesses are in it, going back to NXT, and if he and how you feel about the any differences so far. We haven't seen like a full-fledged match, and that's a concern. But you know, kind of talk about how Kross fit in when he was pushed to the top in NXT.
So Cross was 17-0 in NXT before he lost his championship. That is the second longest win streak to start a career in NXT after, of course, Asuka. So throughout this, I just thought, you know, he's fine, but he's always the less interesting wrestler in his match. He's got the less, and certainly you're noticing he's not always taking bumps and you're questioning why that is. Cause that is something that could be behavioral and it could be the guy's really suffering from something.
Yeah, he might've been told in NXT, you're a monster. Don't bump for these guys.
Right.
And then it's not his fault, but I was, you know, a wrestler who I converse with a lot just said, that's not going to fly on the main roster. Like he's going to have to take, he's not going to be Braun Strowman on the main roster. You know what I mean? Like size-wise and just his overall presence, it's like he can't get away with wrestling like, you know, Braun. And Braun takes more bumps than Karrion Kross did in NXT. And Braun is still, you know, a monster. And so, yeah, he might have had physical ailments or he might have been told not to, or he just might not like to, or he might not be good at him. But whatever the reason is, on the main roster, there's got to be more give and take. But in NXT, Kelly, he was pushed as this unbeatable, you know, unstoppable force against a super talented core of smaller, more athletic wrestlers. And, you know, as, you know, Shawn Michaels was the one who created movement, his matches. And I think it was Kevin Nash in my Torch Talk interview with him a dozen years ago, or maybe, God, it's like 15 years ago now. You know, he's like, Shawn just is great. He just creates movement. You know, he creates movement in the ring. And so when he's in there with a Sid or a Nash or somebody whose gimmick isn't fast movement, he's really good. And, you know, that's not Drew. You know, Drew's not a smaller guy. He's a bigger guy than Karrion. So it's going to be a challenge. That's why I think ultimately Cross can be valuable at, you know, as a second tier gatekeeper of sorts.
Yeah, I think that he kind of fell into this thing in NXT where they've done a few times where they booked somebody in a way that was not going to work on the main roster, whether that's just because it's better as a small-time gimmick or because he only could be a monster there. And I think a lot of times people were perhaps too critical of him because it was in an era that everybody agreed had some of the greatest wrestling that, like the actual wrestling product that NXT had ever had. And all of a sudden, this guy comes in, and he's just gimmick to the hilt and not a great wrestler to the level of the last however many champions. And I think people
are so one-dimensional. And
yes, he's really a throwback promo, and I don't mean that in a great way. But he had the best entrance of anybody, the most memorable entrance of anyone. And I think there were some things to like. Then of course he got torpedoed by losing a throwaway match to Jeff Hardy like 2 weeks before he's supposed to end his being unbeaten at the hands of Samoa Joe for the championship. But so some of the stuff hasn't been his fault, but I just don't know I don't think his ceiling is anywhere near as high as they're trying to find. But what the heck? There's no harm in seeing what sticks.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think he looks better with the hair. I think his promos are broadening out from, as I say incessantly, looking like he's trying to scare, you know, 8-year-old girls at a Halloween haunted house. You know, I need to see something more grounded. I still would like a better idea of what TikTok means and what did Cole say that he was trying to do, like go like he's trying to take Drew back in time or something like that.
Yes.
What was the phrase? Oh no, yeah. Perhaps he wants to reset the timeline here on SmackDown.
Yeah.
So that is a platitude. A platitude is something that sounds clever and is vacuous. There's nothing to it, but you say it because it sounds cool. See almost every Bray Wyatt promo, or Aleister Black promo, where you're like, okay, that you think you're pretty cool saying all those things, but could you in plainer English explain what that adds up to? And you can't. So I need something more than TikTok and reset the timeline. What does that mean? I don't relate to that. I'm insulted by you saying that as if I'm like, ooh, that's spooky. Now, so where do I pay to buy a ticket to see him? Like, no, what does that even mean? And I'm fine if you give me a meaning, then I'm for it. But you can't just say it because you think it sounds cool if you can't give some foundation for what it means. So, Kelly, what is the TikTok? What's the origin of it?
I wish I could tell you there was more than meets the eye.
It's a loaded question.
I mean, it was a threat to somebody. It was usually Scarlett who carried it. She would set it up, and he would say TikTok as she set up the hourglass, which doesn't go TikTok, but whatever. platitudes and such. Yeah, it was something that they did once, and I guess people thought it was cool, or some important person thought it was cool, so it stuck around. And then they just did a storyline where I think Keith Lee shattered the thing into a million pieces. And I thought maybe they were going to move away from that, but they had another one made, and so it persists. And now it's just something they say, and they don't really say what, why. I guess.
Yeah, so just put some thought into it this week, people, in WWE. Tyrion and Paul Levesque and Scarlett and whomever, just writers, just like have a little Zoom call and go, okay, let's add some backstory to this. You know, I mean, just tell us. We know Aaliyah hid her training from her parents. Michael Cole's all full of facts. Maybe Corey Graves jealous tonight. So give us some facts. Give us something that we can, you know, that's more tangible about where he comes from, what his goal is, and don't just give these spooky platitudes. And it's insulting to think, oh, look at that. He snarls and he goes TikTok and something about a timeline. Boy, like, just, come on. It's a national show in front of millions of people. Give us something better than that. So we'll see. Again, if there's not a cop-out non-finish again for 8 weeks, it's not a problem. But when you get two of them for two different purposes in 1 week, it's like, it's a sign of Levesque not being a brave booker already, that, you know, he's not going to make the hard decisions. And you got to make hard decisions if you are going to book the match or don't book the match. And I just think it's going to eat away at people's investment in matches, especially the ones where you can't imagine who's going to win because it seems so hard to imagine either guy winning. And as Mike, you said, I knew this was going to happen. Well, that's not good. I mean, if I watch the NFL on Sunday, oh, the Vikings and Packers. I know there won't be a winner in that one. I've watched the NFL before. You know, I just watch for some cool throws and, you know, guys bashing into each other. I like the tackles. But I know the outcome won't matter because they'll just have some run-in or a tie or whatever. Like, if that was everybody's attitude about the NFL, you know how much smaller viewership would be? The idea that makes sports amazing to watch and entertaining is there are outcomes. Even when it's two massive forces with momentum and you can't imagine one losing and one winning, like the NFL playoffs last year were fantastic with that. But there's going to be, and Paul Levesque talked about this. He wants the thrill of agony of the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. And now he's already, you know, hitting the trap door and sneaking out. Okay, I know I'm to the point of having made my point like three times, so I'm going to stop. But I am I want this era of WWE to be better. That's what's driving me. Mike, back to you.
Yeah, I agree, Wade. Like, we got to have clean finishes. I mean, Monday night they're doing an open challenge for the women's title with Bel Air. That should be good. So hopefully we get a clean ending with that, and then we're getting a women's tag team title match. So hopefully we get a clean ending there. I think we will. But yeah, overall, yeah, I agree with you, Wade. And it'll be interesting though at Extreme Rules, like if Cross would go over Drew. I assume if he's facing Roman Reigns at Survivor Series, which is the rumor that he would go over. I don't know if you want to have Drew lose again. I mean, you could always build Cross back up. You know, Drew beats him. I think you could build Cross back up to face Reigns in Survivor Series. So I don't think that would be a problem if Cross lost. But, yeah, we'll see what happens. Who do you guys think will go over?
Well, like we saw with the match at Clash at the Castle, Kelly, you can say, you know, they've got to do a finish. And Drew's at his hometown, and this could be a moment that really elevates and gives Drew momentum, and he's a guy who can be there every week on both shows. He's probably willing to work both Mondays and Fridays, and a case can be made. But Roman Reigns' reign has been special, and it's been, you know, like territories do really well when there's a star wrestler at the top. Hulk Hogan was that. Ric Flair was that. If you have that, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin, if you have that, It usually coincides with good business. And so, you know, Todd Martin especially made this point on The Fix. You know, you don't want to mess with that. And now, you know, they made their decision, but the decision to not have Drew lost, but it wasn't a cop-out finish in the sense that it introduced a new major character. And then they followed up on it with a match tonight, which is kind of what makes me, you know, more worked up about the finish. It's like, you had this thing at the Clash, now Drew wants revenge, and now you're just moving on to this other feud with Cross, and we're not going to get the result. But the finish of Cross and Drew, like predicting saying what they should do, is with too limited. There's not enough information to say who should go over because it does depend on what they want to do with both going forward. That doesn't mean you can't make a prediction, but it doesn't mean that if they go against your prediction or what you think they should do, that there's not a good reason for it. And I actually think at the Clash, Sokoa being a factor in the finish was fine because you're introducing a major character and you've already followed up on it. And so that works better for me. Same way if next Friday on SmackDown, they suspend Karrion Kross for cutting the match short and preventing a finish. That doesn't mean Drew can't cut an old school promo, Kelly, saying, no, don't suspend him. I want him in the ring. You know, you can do that, but the promotion, the people in charge, Adam Pearce, should take a strong stand that we're here to fight to the finish in WWE, not have the embarrassment of a show going off the air without a finish. I mean, and I do think it's just been beaten out of people to expect that, but they should demand it and expect it. Kelly, your thoughts on Cross Drew?
Yes. Similarly, I was going to say, it depends very much on where they're going to go and how long this program's going to be. The longer this program is going to be, the more likely it is that Cross is going to go over in this match to create that obstacle for Drew. And the only problem with that is that they just kicked – I mean, they'd be kicking Drew while he's down at this point since he just lost that match. But sometimes that's the best time to absorb a loss. So I think if they're going to continue to test the waters with this Karrion Kross main eventer project, which I don't know that I would do if I was booking, but that this is what they're trying. If they're going to try to get any mileage out of him as a main eventer, I think that this is the right time for Drew to absorb one more loss before he just turns it on and gets his win back. So I guess in the name of answering your question, I will guess Karrion Kross, but based on what they do in this program the next couple of weeks, I reserve the right to change that answer.
Right. Mike, anything else you want to close with?
Yeah, on a Liv and Rousey. First off, Liv, I think the Clash at the Castle, you know, had a really good performance. I think she looked they made her look really good out there. You know, she was able to showcase herself good, and I'm glad she got a clean win over Baszler. Like, yeah, I was happy for Liv that night, and I'm glad she's still the champion. So now I'm intrigued by this rematch with Rousey and Liv. And, you know, I mean, the obvious thing that's probably going to happen is Rousey beats Liv, and then somewhere down the line, Baszler and Rousey feud over the title. But then I'm thinking, maybe does Baszler possibly make Rousey lose somehow? And maybe cost Rousey the match, and that begins a feud with the two of them, because they don't really need a title to feud with. And then that's a way to keep the belt on Liv at the same time.
Right.
Do you guys see a scenario like that? And or could Liv turn heel and go with Baszler? Could they do some kind of big swerve like that? What do you think?
Your scenario is what I would prefer, because I would love to see one of the things on this show that is troublesome is the steep division. It's a very, very top-heavy division. It feels like a lot of these women don't matter. And it seems like every time Wade and I talk together, it's during one of those multi-woman matches where the cannon fodder is just treated so poorly. I mean, they're losing in 2-3 minutes. I couldn't believe – you could blink. You could go upstairs to refresh your drink, come back down, and be like, are the other three selling on the outside of the ring? No. They're out. But yes, I actually, in a step to reestablish this women's division and make it a little bit stronger, I'd love to see two different feuds that mattered and not just one at any given time. That would be great. And Ronda, Shayna could be one of those, and live with whoever, it doesn't matter, would be another good one. Maybe DeVille? I don't know. This is the problem. It's not easy to call out who that next person is. I am torn between Ronda costing her the match, Shayna costing Ronda the match, or Ronda going over and then Shayna immediately calling her shot in this feud.
How'd you feel about Liv's body language and facial expressions in the luxury suite watching the match tonight?
I think she's heelish. I don't think that's accidental. I wonder if Liv knows it, or they just tell her what to do and they know that it's going to come off the way they want it to. I think they have been more successful than they have previously with Ronda on the mic, because it seems like they're just leaning into who she kind of is. And a lot of people are just going to really be into this ruthless killer, and not the Ronda that really did not work as a babyface. It seems like the more heelish they allow Ronda to be, the more likely she is to be well responded to, because people think it's more authentic. So this might be an intentional double switch here.
I'm less confident in that. I mean, I guess I'm hopeful that it's intentional.
Yeah,
but
hopeful.
Liv Morgan,
yeah.
Liv seems so inconsistent in how she comes across. And there's just sort of an awkwardness where she's just always trying too hard to emote. And then I get the feeling that the effect on her emoting is not what she intends way too often. And so, I don't know. I mean, I think she was trying to be like the celebrating baby face and did so in a way that just was a turnoff, but it wasn't intentional. Like that, until the announcers start going, what's up with Liz with her feet kicked up, acting all cocky like that? Like, until they say that, I'm not really thinking it's likely that it is an intentional heel turn. I don't blame you for thinking that, because that would be logical. But I just, with most other performers, I would think, oh, yeah, that was, trusted performers, I would go, yeah, that's intentional. But with her, I just don't think it was. I did like Ronda and Shayna interacting. I like the agony of defeat. You know, Ronda, I know you're upset you lost, but I like those two interacting with each other. I want to see Shayna elevated. Kelly, what's worked and not worked with Baszler compared to what Polovic did with her in NXT? And can they get, do you think they've gotten a lot of it back, or they can get more of it back in terms of what they're doing with her now compared to what Vince McMahon did with her, which you know, part of the problem was it happened during the pandemic. She came in, and then all of a sudden there were no fans, and her, it was at a time when they were encouraging wrestlers to make their own noise because there were no fans at the Performance Center and work a faster-paced style. And Shayna Baszler is completely the opposite. Like, she's not going to make a ton of noises, and she's not going to do a bunch of fast high spots. And so she's sort of the wrong person for an empty arena setting, about as poor of a moveset and character as possible. It's just a bad fit. And then I think Vince just sort of, you know, moved away from thinking she was a major star. I think Paul Levesque wants to get more out of her. How is he doing so far?
I think that the baby steps are necessary here because she is a reclamation project at this point, but so many of the women are on this show. So one at a time. And I really, really liked the next step here. When she won that, when she won the match to get the championship match, I thought, hey, she probably doesn't win here, but it's a really good sign to me that she's winning, that there is something in the plans for her and they're going to get something out of her. What really worked for her was a lot of the same things that work when it's working for Ronda. Just a lot of attitude, just a ruthless demeanor, but still kind of, she's really good at being a heel in that, and doing her part in the match in putting over the other person as a threat. Like, if she'll show that she's underestimating an underdog wrestler, the underdog wrestler will roll her up in an O'Connor roll, get a near fall, and she'll like back up and look genuinely fearsome. Like, what the hell did I just allow this person to do? She's so good at a lot of little things that they just have not made use of on the main roster. But she is at her best when she's ruthless, and putting her with Ronda, I can see a really, really good excuse to bring that part of her back to TV. It'll take some time, but I like the steps taken so far.
Yeah. Yep. All right, cool. Let's go to 440 next. Eric, code 440. You are up. Go ahead and state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, Wade. This is Dom from Cleveland. How are you guys doing tonight?
I'm doing good, Dom. Good to talk to you again. What's in your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Yeah, I got a few thoughts on it. So, I don't know, while you guys were talking, I mean, it started, you know, jogging my memory a little bit. I guess the first point I just want to make is I thought Solo looked awesome. I think he looked like he belonged. I thought his demeanor, the way he portrayed himself, was like he was made for this. You know, I was watching actually with my dad tonight, and he was saying, you know, how much he reminded him of, like, his old man Rikishi, and, you know, just the way, you know, he carried himself. I mean, we were impressed by him. So got shades of like Samoa Joe. I really felt like, you know, he just had that, maybe it was that towel or whatever, you know, when he comes out, but was just awesome. So really impressed with him, and you know, really happy to see him on there. The other thing, so there was a point where they were talking about Adam Pearce's absence. You know, they zoomed in on Cole, and he said something along the lines of, you know, Adam Pearce is, I'm not sure if being reprimanded or suspended, but they're handling things internally, and something about him airing out his dirty laundry. And I felt like maybe that little bit of commentary might have been influenced by the events that, you know, transpired at AEW over the weekend. I might be reading a little bit too much into it, but I wanted to see if you guys also heard that and you know, had that same parallelism in mind.
I didn't catch that, and I'm surprised. Kelly, did you?
I didn't. If it was Vince, they would have done something, I think. If it was Vince in the 90s, they would have spent most of the show doing whatever it was. But I don't know. I think, yeah, you've jogged my memory now and made me think of that. And I guess anything's possible. It is wrestling. They do love taking little swipes, but it's not as, I don't know. It doesn't seem like there's as much bad blood between companies as there used to be. So I don't think.
I think there is. I disagree. I think what Tony Khan's rant on Sunday night, getting all worked up. I got more money than Jim Crockett Jr. And they're, you know, picking on me by putting two shows on the weekend. He didn't use those words, but that was kind of the gist. Tony Khan's worked up.
Yeah.
And, you know, they ran that NXT show, you know, right before the pay-per-view for AEW. And then, you know, Paul Levesque, who used to say, Kelly, NXT's not developmental. It's the third brand. You know what he said when someone brought up, hey, you know, Tony Khan beat you last time. He's like, oh yeah, but that was developmental. This is the real deal. So,
and I guess, I mean, the talent, because the talent aren't, for the most part, getting into these sniping fits. And Chris Jericho is who he is, and we always have to wonder how much he's just being a carny, he very much is. I don't say that in a mean way. I think it's fun what he brings to the table. I just don't think it's that nasty for the talent. Don't know if we're covering Sokoa yet, but...
Talk about him. Talk about him in NXT, and then talk about how they're using him similar or different on the main roster so far.
Main difference, he was a face in NXT. He was very good, and he was pretty good right away. But even as good as he was right away, he continued to improve, and they continued to putting him, his matches got longer. He got bigger spots. They gave him championship matches. And in both championship matches they gave him, I bet against him solely because I was like, I don't think there's anything left to do. I think he's too valuable to be. And of course we all said they got to go bloodline. I mean, they could maybe put him on the opposite show for a while, but I think you inject life into that story by bringing him there to him quickly. They kind of threw him out there as a tweener, and I think they kind of wanted to see how fans would respond. And they'd book him up against baby faces, but people would still be cheering Sokoa. So they just went full-on babyface with him for the rest of his run. He had a really fun, bizarre street fight, false count anywhere, with Von Wagner. Pulled Von Wagner's most fun match out of him, which was it's doing the Lord's work. I noticed the Rikishi vibe, certainly with the hair. I'm expecting him to go out there and say, all right, Austin, I did it. But I really think he's going to be a great part of this storyline. I don't know how he's worked in yet, and I love that I don't know.
What about the Samoa Joe comparison? Where does that work and not work?
I hadn't thought of that. It can work in the fact that both of them can make matches look like fights. There is that. Sokoa's okay on the mic, but he doesn't sound as erudite and as menacing as Samoa Joe yet. And I don't know, you only are as smart as you are. I don't think he's going to catch Samoa Joe in just sounding as clever and as whatever, as Samoa Joe as he is on his promos.
When he's not yelling at the top of his lungs.
Right. When he's
part of the issue, some people can only yell. That's all they can do.
Yep.
But like Dolph is better when he doesn't yell. And he's also like, it's super obnoxious and abrasive and annoying when he does yell. So stop yelling, Dolph. Thank you. He has. So I shouldn't like pick at that scab. But with Joe, it's like what you're saying about him is he is erudite. It's like, just talk to me normal. It's like Drew's promo tonight. Yep. He talks soft and deliberate. And I was on the edge of my seat listening to his every word because it didn't feel like I'm going to yell at you because that's what pro wrestlers do. It felt like real emotion, and he was working to calm himself. And so, yeah, Joe at his best, and he was just as good as anybody when he wasn't yelling. Yep. He just owned the mic. He owned the space. And, you know, I remember interviewing him after the whole ROH scandal early on in the ROH run when the co-founder, you know, got booted. And I interviewed him after that, and he was just like, you know, I had to take a locker room leadership role, and he was talking about what he did and how he talked to people. And it was like, oh, you know, translate this to the air, you know, on the TV, and it'll be great. And, yeah, so so Sokoa's got work to do before he's in Joe's league on Joe's stronger promos.
Yes, and I also think Sokoa is going to be used for at least a while, a guy who doesn't have to talk a lot. There's going to be a lot of talking around him, what with the Usos and Sammy. He can be the cool, quiet guy for a while. That's not a problem. That's kind of how they used him anyway. Even though he can kind of hold his own in a promo, he really does seem like the kind of cool cat who doesn't have to say all that much to say what he wants to say. So it'll be interesting to see how long it takes before they turn him loose in a real promo setting.
I was intrigued with Cole saying that he was 8 years younger than the Usos, his brothers. He felt he was more felt isolated and wasn't as close to them. And he felt he felt jealous of their success while watching from, you know, a distance. And I was like, those are really interesting things to bring up in his first TV match. Like,
yeah,
you're already laying
little
groundwork.
Early.
Yeah, it feels early, but at the same time, it's like, well, if that's the truth and you just establish it early, it doesn't mean you really have to go back to it anytime soon, but it's there in the back of our minds that he wasn't really that close with them. And he is driven and he is ambitious. And yeah, it's like he's not super tight with them. So they've already planted seeds. And again, if they don't talk about it for 18 months, but they talked about it there, we can have this callback moment. And so I just, you know, that's just stick a pin in it. And I don't expect them to bring that up right away. They might. I mean, I think that would be premature, but if they just wanted to kind of drop that in the water for now, so it kind of comes back later. I like that because they've already added a dimension to his character. I like Cole saying Aaliyah had to hide that she was training to be a pro wrestler from her parents. You know, and her parents finally came to accept it. She had to come out as a wrestler. That's a nice touch. Like, you know, that works. That makes you like her more because she wanted it so bad, even if her parents didn't approve of it. So with Sokoa, they've added this little personal touch, and it's something that they can, you know, knead into the storyline whenever they have that in mind.
And you can frame it in a couple of different ways. If later on it means he's going to turn babyface and turn against them for the resentment, yep, then right now all it has to mean is he feels isolated from his brothers and he wants to have a relationship with them and he wants to impress them because he always thought they were cool.
Yep.
And you don't have to hit us over the head with it, but you can show us that in the way he acts and in the way he's trying to really be in the room with them. And in a way is just as much a victim as Sami Zayn of them.
I'm also wondering if this isn't if they could go that way, they can go another way, which is he ends up maybe reading too much into the comments or they're used in a different way, but it's Sokoa and the Usos against babyface Roman Reigns down the line. Again, a year from now, 18 months from now, something, not something, you know, in time for December, January, February this year. But establish them as a unit. But if things go well, can Sokoa be the heel who kind of creates that situation that leads to Roman becoming a babyface? And I want Sammy to turn face on Roman first. I want Sammy to have a run, you know, breaking away. But I just, there's so many things I can do with the bloodline and adding Sokoa to it after impressing in NXT and having those family ties and looking good tonight. There's so many cool places they can go with this, and they may have it mapped out, or they might just think, yeah, we got a few options here. Let's see how it goes. But I am with adding Sammy to the mix and Sokoa to the mix, having Heyman gone, you know, he's got SmackDown behind the scenes. He's not like, you know, whatever, you know, on a long vacation or on the outs. It's just, they're waiting, you know, for the right moment. And I want to know when that moment is. And then the bloodline has changed since Heyman was around. Sammy's around all the time, and now Sokoa's been added. Heyman's coming back to a different bloodline. How does he interact? Is he as deferential? It cower in the presence? What's the word I'm looking for? Heyman's, there's a better word than deference, you know, to Roman. Subservience. You know, is he a subservient towards Sokoa or not? And does that irritate Paul if Roman wants him to be? Or does, like, the dynamic between everybody is so established, including Jay and Jimmy feeling different about Sammy. It just, I'm excited for the next 6 months.
Yeah, I love how many options they've given themselves. And I wonder how many of them are mapped out, and I wonder how many of them are fluid. And they're just, every week you're seeing something, but you don't want to pull the trigger too fast because no matter which direction you go, there's another potentially equally interesting direction that you could have gone. It's a really fascinating time with this story.
It's like getting a $100 gift card for Christmas and going to the mall and being like, I could buy this, but I could buy that. And I'm not sure what I'm going to do, but I'm going to the mall. You know, like, and I got my gift card with me. They got some things they can cash in, but they might not have decided yet exactly how they're going to do it. Or they might have one penciled in. That's their intent. But, yeah, it's pliable depending on how crowds react.
Oh, yeah. You can just go home with your $100 gift card and save it for another week.
No, because then you forget it. You forget you have it. And then, like, you discover it, like, 2 weeks after the expiration month.
I did that once with 8 years in a hidden pocket in one of my wallets.
it was a fun day last summer. I took my son out, and I have a bag full of gift cards that he had gotten, I had gotten, and, you know, or that were mailed as, like, refunds for things, you know, if you turn, you know, trade, if you, whatever. So we just went out. We just drove around to all places. We got free lunch. We got free stuff at, like, Walgreens. We got free stuff at Target. Not free, but, you know, we cashed it in. We just went and had a shopping spree with all our gift cards. It was a really fun afternoon.
Oh, well, I know all those places. We go to the same places.
So I'm just saying, if you got gift cards laying around, turn it into a fun family event or just a solo shopping spree. Like, just spend it all. All right. I hotshotted the gift cards, would be a way to put it. I didn't save them. Although I had saved many of them. Who cares? Nobody cares about this story anymore. All right, let's go to let's go back to Dom. Dom, any follow-up on anything we said there?
Well, yeah, it's actually kind of funny that you said something about Aaliyah and her having to come out, quote-unquote, because what the hell, excuse my language, is going on with her and Raquel? Okay, they are way too touchy-feely. I really do not appreciate her jumping on her and kissing her face multiple times at the end, beginning, down the ramp, whatever's going on. I think a while back I mentioned to you how I didn't even like seeing Dominic carrying Ray on his way to the ring. Now they're doing the same thing with Raquel and Aaliyah. And I just don't need to see tag teams jumping on each other and kissing their faces. Like, I think it's too much affection. I'm not trying to sound homophobic or anything like that. It's just not – it makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable, and it looks overly produced, really fake. And it just, to me,
it wasn't it wasn't heterophobic when people didn't want to see Ty Conte mash faces with Sammy Guevara.
Right,
homophobic.
Yeah,
right. So I get your point there. But I don't know that – here's the thing. I don't know if that's what they're going for or not, but it's weird. And it is sort of off – I don't know if it's off-putting, but sort of like just puzzling. Like, for people who didn't see they got halfway to the ring. Raquel spins her title belt around, so it's on the small of her back, pointing backwards. Mm-hmm. And so they're shooting her from behind, and then Aaliyah slaps her butt, like, and then acts sort of excited about it. And then Raquel gets in the ring, and Aaliyah leaps into her arms like they're about to, cross the threshold. I don't know what they're going for, and I don't think they're hinting that they're a couple. I don't think so. What do you think, Kelly?
I don't know what's worse, the fact that they did all that, or the fact that this is literally the most interesting thing that these two have ever done.
Well, there is that.
There is no color to this gimmick. There is no – they're just a couple of people who go out there and wrestle. They've really just not been given much of anything. So I was just like, this is really stupid, but it is a thing that they're doing.
Yep.
It's their team – has something to latch onto in my mind now. I just don't know how you use it or if there's supposed to be anything more than what they did.
And not to mention, we have been seeing the Alpha Academy with, Gable kissing Otis from time to time as well. He did that tonight. he just gives him a big smooch on the face, and he talks about his number one guy. So again, not to sound, absolutely not a budge any of that, except it doesn't seem like it fits in that context. I would like to see a little bit less of that, no matter if it's man, woman, whatever. Right. But and I did have just a small thought on Karrion Kross. I loved Killer Kross. I'm a big fan of his from, MLW, the Lucha Libre Worldwide days. I think that his character is too complex for casual wrestling fans. I think there's too much that they're trying to present, and it's a little bit vague to some. Just a funny thing, like I wanted to buy one of his shirts on the WWE shop. I can't get myself to do it. I don't understand what's going on with this shirt. The front of it says Faith for the Fallen, and the back of it says Nothing We Do Is Unjust. All are guilty, and the hands of time decides the judgment. I don't want to be asked questions about this shirt when I go to the gym, so I'm not buying it. Okay,
good
they,
for you.
They think I'm in some religious cult, or I don't know what it,
just,
what it shows. So,
it's, just say,
it's
man, it's Jim
it,
Morris. They'll be like, oh, no,
yeah, I don't know what it is. It's just weird, and it's a little too much. It's along the lines of the comments that like Triple H had about Bray Wyatt and his creativity, where it's almost too much, right? Where like, you know, a simple riff and most music can be catchy and sell a million copies. But then when you try to get a little bit too, you know, too much into the composition where you'll start to lose people. And I think they need to try to simplify Karrion Kross's character a little bit more here. They can keep that somewhat of that mystique, but yeah, at least tell us, I mean, what the heck this TikTok means and try to give it a little bit more context. But I'll, you know, I'll leave you guys with that. I'm sure there's other callers I want to get on. Shout out to Reverend Keith. Always like hearing when he calls in. He's one of my favorite callers. Always appreciate his insight. And Kelly, I love the NXT show. I listen to it regularly. Not always right afterwards because it is on a weekday, but you guys do a great job with that show. And everybody needs to go VIP, whether that's Patreon or directly on the website. Keep doing what you guys are doing. All right. Thanks. You guys have a great night.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it. Absolutely. All right. Our number, by the way, if you're live streaming and you haven't called on yet and you have something you want to contribute to the show, it's not too late. 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. All right. Let's go to Brad in New York next. Brad, thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Kelly. Thanks for taking the call. I don't want to take up too much time, but I just have a litany of things that I kind of wanted to throw out there and see if you guys want to react on any of them or some of them, if that's okay.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So, first of all, I thought this was an awesome show tonight. I mean, I thought, like, everything felt important. Like, there wasn't that kind of throwaway feel to any of the matches that you sometimes get during a SmackDown or during a Raw. I thought at the end, you know, the fade to black was a really cool kind of touch with, you know, almost like Drew's fading out, we're fading to black. But I loved how Michael Cole and Corey were still talking when the screen was black and it was the show was ending. I thought that was just a really cool little thing that they did. Gable was, I thought, incredible tonight. I mean, I thought the way – I understand, you know, a lot of times you'll see these guys go in – and they'll say something about a sports team just to get some, like, what they call, I guess, cheap heat from the crowd or whatever. But that Supersonics thing with Seattle really got them enraged. And it was just – I just thought Gable was masterful tonight. He was so funny with the thank you and the shoosh and the perfect places. So I thought that was great. You know, I thought Solo Sikoa, as your last caller alluded to, was really fantastic, almost to the point that you kind of felt like you wanted to root for him. You know, and you know, I also think that that did overshadow, though, Giovanni Vinci's performance in the first match, which I thought that first match was amazing, and the crowd's energy just really kind of reminded me of Cardiff in a certain way, the way they were going so buck wild crazy for Sheamus. Was really eye-opening to see Sheamus is like the hottest thing in WWE right now in a certain way. I mean, it's kind of hard to argue the crowd reactions that he's getting. They're incredible. But Giovanni Vinci on one move, Butch was coming off the turnbuckle. Giovanni caught him and like right into a suplex, like caught him by the head. It was really an amazing move. And I don't know if you guys caught that, but whatever.
I've seen him do it a few times on NXT.
Yeah.
I never get sick of it. Yeah.
So good. Now, Cole's comments on Sikoa, which you guys brought up during the last caller as well, I heard that from the dirt sheets or whatever. I forget actually where I read it, but that Roman's next opponent is going to be an unknown. Do you guys think there's any way that they're going to create this character out of Solo Sikoa where he's, you know, eventually kind of almost not, you know, not comfortable or not down with what the bloodline is doing, and maybe he's that next opponent for Roman, which I think would be a very interesting angle. I think he's good enough to have a great match with him. And, you know, I think that would be a really interesting story. And, you know, just on Toxic Attraction, I'm really surprised that they lost tonight. You know, when you find it's a championship, you know, it's a non-title match, it just surprises me that, you know, you'd bring Toxic Attraction up, you'd give them the big entrance with the music playing really long, the whole thing with the video, you know, kind of message to Raquel and Aaliyah, and then you just have them lose clean. I just found that to be a little strange if you're trying to build them up as a legitimate threat in the tag team division. And lastly, Scarlett was just really bizarre how she was kind of like sitting over Cross while he choked him out. I don't know. I just found that to be a little weird. I know I've thrown a lot of things out here. I just, if you guys want to comment on any of that, I'd appreciate it.
So, Brad, if you stick around, we'll answer what we remember, and then you keep track of what we didn't cover, because there's a lot there.
Yeah.
Every time you said a subject, I was like, well, if he pauses, I got a lot to say. I don't know if I remember everything I wanted to say. So let's see what we can tackle, but make note if we miss anything when we come back to you. Well, Kelly, you take your pick first of those points.
Well, I wrote stuff down because I got the feeling that when he said litany, I was like, a litany's got to be at least four, right? I too love Chad Gable. Much is being asked of him. He's being asked to fill a lot of time, and he's doing it. I was way into it. My wife usually doesn't watch the main roster with me. Tonight she did, and she was like, he is really good. And she saw him when he was just a dude who could work in a babyface tag team. And she's like, has he always been this good? And I was like, I don't know. He was not asked to do this. And he's always been awesome in the ring. But yeah, I was very happy with him also. Giovanni.
Pause.
Go ahead.
You asked how many is a litany, at least four. I looked it up. Litanies were developed in Christendom for use in processions. In the West, there were traditionally 4 days for these processional litanies.
Oh, my God.
However, in the Catholic Church, six litanies are approved for public recitation. It also can mean a long, repetitive list of a series of grievances. So there's not a set number. I thought when I saw four, I'm like, it's four. And then I'm like, nope, if Catholic, it's six. So it's just that, you know, a handful or two.
I mean, they're always dragging out the longer. That's not to get into Catholicism.
All right, go ahead.
Going
I think we
to
regret that.
Giovanni Vinci. Oh, I adore him. I have ever since he was, well, of course, he was Fabian Aichner a lot longer. 205, not the 205, the Cruiserweight Classic. He was in that. And the man is quite simply twice as strong as people twice his size. It's otherworldly what he can do. There are things he has not broken out on the main roster yet that he broke out regularly on NXT. And in some cases, there's only a handful of guys he can do it to. He's not going to be able to do it to the largest guys there, but just wait for them.
Why did he not get brought in right away?
Now that they've brought him up and it wasn't all that much later,
versus Levesque.
Yes. So they went a different way with him. They changed his name, Giovanni Vinci, and they had him be, he's a little bit like early Tyler Breeze, meaner, but very much wants to be the center of attention and does all his poses, and they would take snapshots of him down the ring. That was the big gimmick late in his NXT tenure, which was very long, by the way, like 6 years. Photos would be snapped of him on the way, and he would just pose and look into the mirror with a winning smile. And on the three photos, it would say Veni, Vidi, Vinci. So I don't know if they're going to bring aspects of that version of him to Imperium. I wouldn't turn it down either way. If he's just straightforward, that'd be great. But I think for the sake of variance, I'd prefer a little bit more Vinci in this act. But yeah, I like that. So as well, Toxic Attraction doing the job to Raquel and Aaliyah is odd. I I'm in favor of non-title matches still being won by the champions, basically always, in which case I just wouldn't have run this match, wouldn't have run this tag team match. It's less prickly for me if Aaliyah just does a job to Gigi Dolan or something like that, if they want to do this. I don't know the reason for this. Toxic Attraction still has some storylines going on in NXT. So is this just a tryout that we were able to watch? I'm not sure. It was.
Yeah, I'm puzzled too. I don't think people are like, well, they need to get that match that they didn't get in the second round, or my life won't be complete. I don't think that was on people's minds. I mean, if you get hurt, you lose your spot. It's. I don't have an answer for why they're here and losing already when they could. And you know, then you don't have Mandy as part of it. So I just don't understand. Mm-hmm. Unless they just need bodies to, you know, lose to Aaliyah and Raquel, and they're like, well, now they'll go back to NXT for, you know, indefinitely, and when they come back, people won't remember.
And finally, on Scarlett weirdly hovering over during the chokeout, she always did that in NXT. So I guess settle in. You're going to see more of it.
Okay, so Brad, how did Kelly do?
You guys did a good job. And one other thing on Butch. You know, I've heard people say, oh, you know, now he's this stupid Butch character. He should be Pete Dunne. I mean, if I'm Butch, I'm thrilled with the position that I'm in. If I'm Pete Dunne or Butch or whatever he is, you know, I'm thrilled with the position I'm in. I think that, you know, he's definitely getting over with the crowd. I think people are really liking him. I don't think that the Pete Dunne character to me in NXT was that like dynamic. I mean, like, I watched NXT quite a bit. I saw him quite a bit. That's just my personal opinion on him. I thought he was, you know, just kind of a everyday run-of-the-mill wrestler who had some kind of gruesome moves. But I think that this character is doing good for him, and I think he's in a good position. And I don't think the name change or any of that stuff was really bad for him at all, despite what people say. And, you know, just on Maximum Male Models and Hit Row very quickly, I don't understand how you do a Maximum Male Models match and you don't have them walk the runway. You don't have them do that. I get it if Triple H doesn't like the gimmick and he doesn't really care to feature them as much or whatever the case is. But I think, you know, if you're going to use them, you have to show them walking down the runway. You have to, or down the aisle, or I think you have to have that. And it kind of bothered me how, you know, Hit Row, who I think sucks, is getting teamed with the Street Profits, who are great, and it kind of is all about Hit Row, and I don't know. I'm just not a big fan of this Hit Row act, guys, and that's really it. But I do think it was an excellent, excellent show, and the only thing you guys didn't touch on was the Solo Sikoa thing that I asked about, with him potentially being an opponent for Roman and maybe leaving the Bloodline sooner rather than later, but that's about it. And thank you guys for the generosity of your time. And I really enjoy this show so much. And go VIP. Thank you.
Thank you, Brad. Appreciate it. Now, Brad had a little more truth in advertising when he said he had a litany in the first phase of the call. On the second phase, Kelly, he said one more thing, and we got, I think, three. But
yeah,
they're all good points. Did you take notes on those three, or did you put your pen down because he said there's just one thing?
He Catholicismed us. We went from four to six, and then to seven. On Solo, which I missed, I think if he's going to be an opponent for Roman, they should drag it out. I feel like you've got immediate – see, I think of Cross, Braun Strowman as such throwaway commodities. I'm fine with just getting their matches with Roman out of the way early. Solo, I have so much more hope for in a long-term sense to be a contributor to the main event scene that I would prefer they take their time with him. I don't want him to be put in a sink or swim spot that he just simply doesn't have to be in this early, even though I wouldn't necessarily bet against him. But I think
he hasn't shown you enough where you're like, hey,
no,
let's make this guy the centerpiece babyface of Raw or SmackDown.
Yeah, no, and I also think if you strap the rocket to him right now, you run the risk of the issue that they ran with doing it too early with Roman. I think that could happen. On Pete Dunne being Butch, I thought Pete Dunne's gimmick in NXT was great for Pete Dunne in NXT. It wasn't going to work, him being just a dominant, monstrous force when he was smaller than most of the guys on the main roster. I don't know how I feel about his name. I know I'm not in love with it, but I also like that they call him Butch, and it does kind of fit the way he is. As far as his gimmick, I kind of love it. I love that he's so impetuous. I love that he has to be calmed down so he doesn't get himself disqualified. I think it's just a great visual having two wiser giants kind of holding him back like, hey, come on, man, you're out of the ring. I just think it's fun and funny every time Ridge and Sheamus have to calm him down. So I would also think that he doesn't have complaints about his spot.
Yeah, I'm with you. I said that from the beginning. Like, I mean, I know, but Pete Dunne, first, well, I want to say this. It's not a skill to take somebody's finger and yank it. Like, I never don't get that. There's no finesse to that. I took a little bit of jiu-jitsu, and there's finesse to jiu-jitsu. And I was like, how is he making me do this with my, how did he do that? That was like, he just like would touch my wrist, and all of a sudden I'd have to do like twist around three times to avoid my wrist breaking. What he's doing is just doing what six-year-olds do if they want to be punks. They just grab your finger and yank on it. So I've never been impressed with it. And I think it's stupid when he snaps a finger and you're supposed to think it's broken, and then the guy doesn't have a dangling broken finger. So I've always thought that was dumb. I'm just on the record with that. But I think you didn't say anything about that. But what you said about him is right. He was good in NXT as Pete Dunne, but the guy who had to be held back by Butch and Sheamus, I like that. I thought that was a nice touch that they added to him. And I know people were upset about the name and he didn't keep his name, but that happens to everybody. It wasn't some especially egregious insult to him because of X, Y, or Z about him. It's just what Vince does. So that said, yes, of course he's happy. He's making more money than most people who have been in NXT who were his peers, not all of them. And he is super talented, but he's smaller than almost everybody's going to face on the main roster. So give him something that's a hook, and they have. You know, when you think of Butch, you immediately think of personality traits and that he is high octane, and that's not diminishing him. So, but the fact that he's morphed more into Pete Dunne, but he's still Butch, is fine as long as he doesn't, like, as long as there's still some Butch there. It's weird, but I don't want them to take away the idea that he just can't control himself and he just wants at everybody whenever he gets worked up. I like that, and I don't want them to have that go away now that he's acting a little bit more like Pete Dunne used to. I think maybe there's a happy medium that melds both, and everybody can be happy.
The only other thing was Maximum Male Models. The runway thing, sure. You do have four different teams in this eight-man to introduce, so time is going to be part of it. And they did, there must be some respect or some affinity for it because they still got their big moment with the hard cam and the turn and the pose. My wife thought that was hilarious. I don't know how high I think Triple H is going to promote this particular gimmick, but I thought it was okay.
I don't think it was ever meant to be a serious act. I think it was always going to be about where they are. I don't think they've lost faith in them or less belief, or Vince had more than Hunter. I just think this is what they are. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's fine, and they're all in on it. Good for them. I'm interested in what they're going to dress and how they're going to evolve as personalities and characters. And I don't know if it's a long-term thing. And I mean, Basse has, you know, limitations to the ring, and Mansoor, you know, I don't know how he feels about this trajectory versus the prior trajectory, but kind of like with Butch, I mean, it's distinct and it's memorable. And I don't think it's like a career killer for either of them, but it's distinct. I just think they should give Max the microphone more. you know, he's really good on the mic, and I don't see why. And frankly, I don't know of him being injured, but I don't know why he's not also wrestling in some form or fashion. But if you're not going to have him wrestle, then have him talk on the mic because he's really good.
Yeah, and don't ever have Sophia Cromwell talk because she is not. Like when I heard that they were moving him out because they didn't like the way that he delivered some line and they moved her in. And I was like, well, you don't get to use the excuse that you didn't like his delivery because nobody, she was at a time. Oh my gosh. 2.0 folks. I have to cover it every week. So I see the warts and all. A lot of good things to see, but I have seen most of the worst promos I've ever seen in the last year or so. And hers were bottom feeding. They were really, really rough. And I could not believe she got called up. But if she's not going to talk ever, I guess it could work. Whatever.
And the issue with Max, I don't think it was that he got, you know, cut from the act for a whole week before the Vince Paul Levesque transition took place. It's that Vince didn't like his attitude when he was critiqued, that there was an aloofness or, you know, he didn't know his place for being so new on the main roster. And Vince is like, I'm not putting up with that. And so it just was like this sort of impulsive overreaction that, you know, cooler heads prevailed when there was a changing of the guard. But it wasn't so much, I mean, I don't think Vince was super impressed. Well, I shouldn't say that. I don't know. Vince might have been impressed with him and just critiqued him on and do something slightly different. And Max just, from what I heard, reacted in a way that felt like insubordination or an attitude that Vince was like, you're not important enough to get away with that. See ya. Okay, let's keep rolling through here, and we'll go to Sean in Murfreesboro next. Sean, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What are your thoughts on SmackDown tonight? We covered a lot so far.
Yes, you have. First of all, I'll say, wait again. All the coverage, you know, this week's been fantastic. Getting to get on with Zach and Tyler, you know, again, what they're doing with the YouTube channel, again, it's been fantastic. Rich, all you guys, just awesome. Kelly, love you guys covering NXT, man. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Good to hear your voice.
Yep, good to hear yours as well. Yeah, you guys said a lot. Brad, I've been appreciating you calling in, too. And, I mean, I disagree with some of what he was talking about. I kind of want to go into that. First of all, going back to Wade, your rant was right on. The fade to black is I'm not with Brad. It was stupid, very stupid. I don't do that anymore. Please get that off my screen. That doesn't make it more serious. It just makes it dumb. I did like at the end how when he did have it in, at least, where Drew was still strong, like still trying to get up from it, and it took him a while to finally get down. I thought that, you know, still built Drew as being strong, which I kind of like that touch there at the end, too, with that part of it. But going back to my main rant of the night was, you know, with the women's five-way, Kelly, you kind of talked about it. Oh, my God, they've got to stop this. Let's have a five-way tag team championship contender match where none of the people deserve to have it be in the title mix. None of them do. Where's Lacey been for the last 8 billion weeks? Yeah, she's been terrible when she's been on TV, but she hasn't been on TV in forever. Why does she deserve a title, a chance to be in a title match? Like, you know, her, Sonya Deville, I like Sonya. I know we all do, but they've just done her horribly on TV. Why does she deserve a match? She's lost, like, how many matches in a row that she's been in? You know, with who else was in there? Natalia. Like, yeah, she you know, kind of deserves this because she's been around for a while, but, I mean, what has she really done lately? You know, nothing. And Xia Li, what in the world has she done to deserve a title match? Has she ever won on TV? No. None of them deserve a match. Why are we randomly putting them in a five-way when we know, good and God well, Ronda's going to dominate all four of them in, like, 5 minutes? Like, it just – stop with this. Am I way off base? I mean, it just made no sense to me at all. What'd you think?
No, I agree. I mean, I shouldn't be unbalanced in my rants in terms of what makes no sense and leave that out. Kelly, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's in addition to all those things, I just find it tedious that every 4 weeks it's time for a gaggle of women on this show to have this because they don't have another way, apparently, to have a woman call her shot or have a feud start organically. They just always have this match. And if they want to put in, I see the value in putting in cannon fodder. I get it. But if they're going to do that, I'd love for them to frame this as an invitational or frame this as saying, hey, some of these women don't get a lot of opportunities. This is a match that they were able to get into. This is their opportunity. And if they let this one slip by, it could be a while before the next opportunity. There are ways to sell these matches that I understand seeing the value in having Ronda just destroy three of the four other ones. And while Sonya got rid of the other one. It seems like it would be easy to do, but this is just so the way wrestling is. I don't know that the announcers really think to do that.
And you know, it'd be great to have a deep women's division with a lot of matches going on that created a real sense of hierarchy and a sports-like feel. And you would plan this match 5-6 weeks ahead, and it would be, you know, a four-way with four people who are qualified, or a mini tournament with four wrestlers that fans cared about enough that you could actually have them do full-fledged matches and not just have to do quick finishes. But that's not where WWE in the women's division is. And I am, you know, the absence of irritants early on my wish list would have been throwing a bunch of people into a three-way, four-way, five-way, or six-way match in order to, quote, determine who the qualified contender is, because this is not a good – it's not a sensible way to do it. And then you end up having somebody like Natalya tap out really quick, and then you have two wrestlers at once tapping out real quick. It's just – it undercuts and diminishes all of them all at once, and instead just have a one-on-one or a mini-tournament or have some sort of criteria otherwise where someone just gets it. So this just feels like, you know, it's just a shortcut. It's just a lazy shortcut, and it's not as important as the main event with, you know, Drew McIntyre and the new wrestler introducing Sokoa and Cross coming in. You know, it's like, it's not as important, but part of the reason it doesn't feel as important and you feel you can get away with doing this is the fact that you so poorly booked the women's division that it doesn't seem like a big drop-off when you do something just that just makes no sense like this tonight. And so, again, it's sort of like, you know, what you get comfortable doing, you just sort of do, even if it's a bad habit. But just because you've done some, you know, people say sometimes, well, they've always done it. I'm like, well, right, but I'm not going to just accept it as a good idea or be neutral just because they've done it. They've done a dumb thing for so many years that now we should just accept that it's the way things are done. So I'm glad you brought it up, Sean.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, Kelly, you brought up about how, you know, we'd love to have two really intense women's feuds, but the women have just been and there's too many women that are talented. Like, again, Sonya being one of them. They're very talented, but they just don't do anything with them, and it's just so sad because of the talent they have, and they just don't use it. And going back to what you said about, you know, toxic attraction, it's like, just don't do that match. I understand Raquel and Aaliyah having to win because they're defending the tag team titles on Monday, and you want to have them a little bit stronger for that match. Like, I get that, but just do a singles match where one of the toxic attraction women, either JC or Gigi, wins. Don't have them lose in their first tag team match. It just doesn't make sense. Paul, make sense to us, man. Make sense to us where we get it and we understand it. But going back to especially with Sheamus, yeah. Again, I'm really liking what they're doing with Sheamus. I don't want to like diminish Ridge Holland because I think he's good with, you know, the Brawling Brutes. I mean, he's good with that tandem of guys. But Ridge Holland, I just don't see a lot of upside with him at all. If he's not with them, I don't see a lot there with him. What do you guys think about Ridge Holland and kind of what he's done with the Brutes? And do you think there's any future for him as a single here soon?
I haven't seen enough that I'm impressed with where I was upset that he lost. You know, like, what are they doing having him be the guy who loses in the match? I mean, it would make sense even if you were sort of impressed with him just based on the hierarchy and it's so obvious that Pete Dunne lose. But you could have had Butch lose, and I don't think people are like, oh, yeah, this one guy lost. But so it felt a little braver to have Ridge lose, but I think it also was a sign they might not be that impressed with him. And I just watch him, and I'm just worried he's going to hurt people. And maybe that's not fair, and maybe in 2 years that'll be a non-issue. But I do watch, and it's like, oh, man, I get nervous about that. Kelly, what do you think?
I've seen a lot of Ridge. I watched I was watching NXT UK at the time he was there, and I saw all of his matches in NXT. So I will say that he rose to the point where I enjoyed watching his squashes. That's about it. Like, I really did like him going out there and just battering a much smaller dude for 2.5 to 4 minutes. That's what he brought to the table. I, too, can't get it out of my head that somebody could get hurt, and it was not lost on me that he threw that back body drop to Ludwig Kaiser.
Kaiser, yes.
And he landed really awkwardly on his leg, and he sold it so well that I am still wondering now how much of a fail that was.
He just jumped to the second rope and was fine. So I kind of was thinking, you know, I think Pac did that last on Dynamite on was it Wednesday or was that the paper? I think it was on Wednesday, where it's like, oh my God, he's hurt. And then it was like, nope, he, you know, shook it off. And like 10 seconds later, he was running the ropes, ready to do a dive. And so wrestlers are just good at selling sometimes, but I had the same thought, and it did look like an awkward fall.
Yeah.
But
and the ref
wonder,
saw it too, because the ref checked on him. So
I wonder if, in the rest of them, just, you know, the rest of probably just says, I'm just selling. You know, and the ref's like, good, just making sure. But I wonder if Ridge is going to be kind of like Jake Hager. You know, you look at him and you're like, this could be a prime, you know, candidate to get a push and be a star. But, you know, over time, you're like, yeah, there's just something not quite there. One or two things aren't quite there that moves them, that prevents him from being leapfrogged by others, I guess is a better way to put it. And that's kind of where I am with him. I just don't know if the personality or what he's showing in the ring makes him someone who isn't going to be leapfrogged. I'm not like, oh, he sucks and cut him and all that. Maybe he will grow into a really solid act. I'm just not convinced of that yet, but I'm not also ready to cut bait by any means.
Yeah.
What else, Sean?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's that too, but yeah. Like I said, Sheamus needs to be a babyface. I think they can do some really good stuff with him, and I'm excited. And go, I just want to say real quick about Sokoa. Like, I do like him a lot. I think this is a big step for him and a good step for him to take on the main roster. And the last thing I wanted to bring up was, you said it going into the notes, but Corey, again, I have nothing against Corey Graves. He's been on TV for a long time. He's a good announcer. He's a good announcer, but. I
knew it.
I do think we're going to miss if Pat does some stuff, you know, that people can say is annoying or he goes over the top. But for me, I like Pat McAfee a lot. I think we're going to really miss him on commentary. I think we really are. It's going to get old. I think with Michael, cause Cole's doing really good work right now, but Corey just kind of, he's almost over the top in a way where I just kind of, when him and Byron go back at each other, I'm like, dude, just, I don't know, go away. With Pat, he just loves the product so much and enjoys it that I really love the way he gets into stuff. But even with the Happy Corbin and circling the monitor, like, over and over and over, like, I mean, I enjoy that. He's fun for me. So what do you guys think about him being gone for a while? Is that going to hurt the commentary quite a bit? So what do you think about that?
I'm not opposed to a break from Pat McAfee, to be honest. I don't know how WWE feels about this, or if Triple H is less of a fan, or if this just really was an opportunity that he couldn't turn down to get this football gig. But I'm okay taking a breather from him. I mean, he got a lot of attention. It might be cutting short whatever they were doing with Happy Corbin. It takes some of the steam out of that, but they can, you know, rev that up again later. I was a fan and am a fan of Pat McAfee, but I felt like I got 125% of what I wanted out of him most weeks. And so, yeah, a little breather is fine. I was most – and I'm largely a fan of Corey Graves. When the camera panned left and it was Corey, I was like, oh. Like, I wanted like, Wade Barrett, you know, bring back Nigel McGuinness, give us Samoa Joe. Well, that'd be news. That'd be newsworthy. You know, but, you know, just somebody different, you know, just a fresh voice. Like, it felt – Maybe it will be somebody different, but if 3 hours of Graves is plenty. I don't need five. I'll put it that way. So I really do wish that they had gone with someone else, and I hope they still do. I don't know. I haven't taken time out to kind of think about who besides like Wade Barrett I think would be good, but of course, you know, Barrett's got a gig. Kelly, what do you think?
I actually laughed out loud a little bit when they did like the tease with who's he sitting next to, and then they panned out, and I was like, "Well, that's the most obvious person it could have been."
Yeah,
I thought that was That was silly. I didn't even think of Wade because he's such an NXT figure at this point, but I adore what he does. Yeah, I mostly like Corey too, but I'm watching the product regularly now, so 5 hours is a lot. And with Pat McAfee, when I was mostly just watching pay-per-views, it seemed like, oh yeah, I get it. I get what people are hyping about McAfee. And now that I'm watching every single show, or have for, 4 weeks, I can see what is grating about McAfee. So I won't say that I was waiting for the breather, but I also know why Wade was.
And this is a terrible idea in a lot of ways, but if you had like the guest co-host of the week for 2 months, if you had a hard end to McAfee's absence, like you could do R-Truth 1 week. You could have Kevin Owens do a guest shot 1 week. You could have Cody show up 1 week. Some of these people might expose themselves in that context over the course of 2 hours calling a match, and it's not something that they're comfortable with, and some of it might not work out too well. So that's why I say it's sort of a dangerous thing to suggest, and it's easy for me to suggest it as a viewer and as a podcaster and reporter to say that would be more interesting, but it would be more interesting than Corey Graves. Like, I would be really curious to see what this, parade of commentators would do. Like, give me Sammy 1 week. Maybe Ridge Holland is surprisingly good at this. Maybe Ivar is surprisingly good at it. Whoever they think might be good for 2 hours, and you've got the budget, just have them practice, on some Wednesday remotely on Zoom, or produce them doing main event for a couple weeks and give us surprises, like give us something fresh and different. And then when McAfee comes back, it's like, hey, he's back and he's the main guy, but we didn't have to sit through 5 hours of Corey Graves every week in the
Dexter Lumis, man. It's all Dexter Lumis.
Actually, that would be funny. Because he would say nothing.
NXT did it.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, didn't NXT do that?
They had him put on the headset and then never.
But it wasn't a full show, was it?
No, it was a match.
Yeah, yeah.
But him having the headset on and not speak was 1,000 times funnier.
And you could just, but instead you could do the Dexter cam where there's like inset image of him, and it's just, he doesn't talk, but his color commentary is how he reacts. But the joke is he doesn't react. It might as well be a freeze frame, but it's not for 2 hours during all this commentary. He's just sitting there, and they just give you a little inset. Maybe not the whole screen all the time, but they show it every once in a while.
And Lumis is a very good cartoonist, so you could actually have him draw stuff on the fly of what he was saying.
Yep. But Max Dupree could be on 1 week. Just like, they have people they could, and there might be, like I said, there might be people we're surprised by who would be better than we think. Maybe Natalya would be good, if she wasn't in sort of character, but sort of half in character, but half in analyst mode. I don't know, but I'd take that over, I'd take that over just more Corey Graves. Again, and that's not against Corey Graves. I just think that's a lot of Corey Graves. Sean, anything else?
I want to say, Reverend Keith actually just called me out, or called us out, because it was actually Toxic Attraction. It's not their first match, actually. It's the second, because I had the one match before that. But either way, they still shouldn't have lost. It's still stupid. Is Javier on? Is he on the call?
No. Nope.
Tell me he's on the call, Wade. Nope. He's got to be.
No. He is not.
Javier
this week.
What a loser. What a loser.
Oh,
no,
wow.
Kidding, Javier. You're the,
when he's not you're, around.
No,
Javier.
Javier's the man. He is the man. Javier's the man. I love when he gets the call. And I forgot about Todd Martin. Man, Todd, I appreciate your coverage too with Wade talking about all the stuff going on. Like I said, Wade, I don't mean to harp on it every week, but I want, everybody says it because it's true. You guys do such a good job. I've been a VIP member for as long as I have for a reason. That's why I got on, because you take your job seriously. You own everything you talk about. You have your opinions, and I appreciate that. And I appreciate all you guys do. Kelly, man, it's always good to talk to you. And I always appreciate you guys taking my call.
Sean, thank you for the kind words, as always. Thanks for your support.
Indeed. Thanks. You're my favorite caller, but don't tell any other callers I said that.
PWTorch.com/GoVIP. You can find out all the information on VIP membership that Sean and others have been touting. Marcus Arias said, one of the best things I've done was going VIP. Aside from the great content, it's allowed me to connect with some awesome people, and it even gave me the opportunity to do something I've always wanted to do. Check it out. So it was... Marcus on Twitter. We've had like good feedback. It's been gratifying this week on Twitter and some nice emails from people complimenting our reasoned and insightful coverage of the turmoil in AEW. It was quite the week, and I'm proud of what everybody here did. David Hogan said on Twitter, can't say enough about the efforts of Wade Keller and his guests on this week's flagship episode, 4 hours plus. The insight was top-notch as always. I dare you to find more in-depth analysis anywhere out there. And my seven-year-old loves it too. And Max Go on Twitter said, your VIP coverage of the Punk Elite scandal has validated the cost of my annual Torch subscription in just a few days. Your coverage of the AEW crisis is a nice diversion from the real-world BS that we all deal with day in and day out. Keep it up. So, I'm reading them one, you know, because, I mean, if we're a business and if you're not supporting us as a VIP member, well, there's some encouragement. But I also say, because I want people to know those compliments mean a lot. Like, they really – this was a lot of hours this week, and I'm not complaining. It was a fun week, but, like, it's great when you put in that time and there's some, you know, kind of public or just private email recognition of it. So, sincere thank you, everybody, for that. All right, we'll go to Matt in Delaware next. Matt, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm a little bit late, so a lot of people have gotten to a lot of points that I wanted to make, but I will tell you that I agree with Sean about Ronda Rousey in that five women match. I think it was blatantly obvious when they showed the graphic on the screen that she was going to be the one winning. And I agree with you guys that Liv Morgan, just her mannerisms come off as very heelish to me. But and then on
or
the
oblivious.
Pat McAfee
or oblivious. Like,
yeah.
I'm not even sure she's like, it's more,
it's like she doesn't
like,
realize
it's not
it.
Like she, yeah, yeah. It's like she just, and I feel bad about a lot of her mannerisms and her, even her wrestling and her reaction and her selling. And if she's listening, she's, you know, like, she's gonna be like, you're ruining my night. I'm not trying to be mean about it. Like, she needs some coaching. She needs someone to sit down and like kind of steer her a little more. Cause there's just not I don't think she's got a great instinct for how to come across how she comes across compared to what the goal of how she's coming across is. Anyway, go ahead.
Right. That's well said. And then on McAfee, I agree a lot with, Todd Martin's assessment of him. I don't necessarily need my color commentary to be a fanboy for every single act that comes out. You know, everybody, whether it's heel or face, he's just going overboard about them. I like more traditional announcers where you have a heel announcer, or face announcer, and they're one supporting the heel, one supporting the face, because it helps you as the viewer to know, it just enhances the storytelling better, in my opinion. Now, is Corey Graves my favorite? Not necessarily, but I think he does a fine job. Having him twice a week might be a little much, but whatever. With the thing you guys were talking about, having different wrestlers doing it, like maybe doing it for the entire show would overexpose them, but possibly like during commercial breaks they could bring out a different person every half hour or every two different people a night, so they're only out there for an hour, and possibly people that are somewhat tied to the story being told in the ring to enhance that story a little bit. I don't know. That's just an idea. That's something they're probably not going to do, but I think that's a cool idea to kind of get, hear a different side of each guy or lady that they would put in that position. But anyway, all of a sudden, the Fatal 4-Way tag match that was supposed to happen on Raw, that was actually a pretty nice match going on, even though I don't think either of the four teams really is qualified to be a number one contender for Usos' Undisputed Tag Championships. We're going to see that again next week now. And again, absent from that match is the Viking Raiders. Do you see this match actually getting a finish, with one of those four teams, or do you think we're going to have the Viking Raiders run in and squash that?
Well, I'll add Dom an email from Dominic, not Mysterio. Another Dominic, not Mysterio. He said, "I think there's a lack of logic to have New Day in the number one contender challenger match when they were decimated by the Viking Raiders a week ago. What do you think?" So, yeah, I mean, you're not alone, Matt. We got an email on the same topic. It makes no sense. Kelly, react to anything he had to say.
The four-way for – I'm sorry, I didn't see – I just assumed it was going to be the four teams that were in this week's. I didn't actually catch it on the screen fast enough. What were the four teams that were going to be in this? It is the four that were in
the same four.
I feel like it's kind of telegraphed because – the Street Profits got involved in the main event. And so I feel like they're telling this story backwards where they showed us that it's going to be the Street Profits because they got involved with the Usos. And then they're going to have the match that the Street Profits win later. So why not just eliminate that tedious four-way match altogether and then just have this grow organically? That would make me happier. So,
But let me.
Hold on.
They said the graphic was no. That's okay. They said Angel and Umberto, Otis and Gable, New Day, and the Street Profits.
Oh, okay.
So it's not Maximum Male Models, and it's not Hit Row. It doesn't mean it makes any more sense, but it's not the same four teams.
Okay.
If I recall correctly, and I typed it up as they had the graphic on the screen. So.
Got it. Okay. Either way, I'm calling the Street Profits the winners here, just because of their. Their involvement.
It'd be ridiculous if New Day went in on a title shot because, I mean, you want match outcomes to matter. You want there to be match outcomes.
Yep.
If there isn't one, you want that to seem like it matters. But you can't not put the Viking Raiders in because you want someone else to win and you don't want the Viking Raiders to come up short because you're giving them a monster push at the expense of making it seem like you're a terrible decision maker who doesn't know how to put people in a match that has merit. You should at least like have the announcers say, hey, the Viking Raiders were offered this spot, but they need something better than what I'm thinking of. You know, they were at, you know, some Viking getaway or something. I don't know.
Right.
But give us a reason that the people who are clearly deserving of a title shot more than Umberto and Angel and New Day and Otis and Gable aren't in it. Address that. Okay.
And the other thing that I was going to touch on is that on Liv being oblivious, I've made this point before, but I still think it resonates with her entire career. Liv was called up extremely early in her time in NXT. She had been on TV fewer than 10 times, maybe fewer than 5. And I think that so many of her issues with the little things are still a result of her being rushed through the system as a favorite, as somebody whose look stood out, and I think that the toothpaste doesn't go back in the tube completely, but she'd be so much better off now if she'd spent another full year there, or even just a few more months being on TV learning.
Yeah. Go ahead, Matt. Any follow-up?
Yeah, I was going to say, when I meant the four same teams, I meant the four same teams that were in the match on Raw that Strowman ran in on. But
both Kelly and I interpreted that. So, good for you to point that out.
And I think that having no Viking Raiders in that match means that they're going to come in and say, you know, what about us? And they're just going to destroy everybody or something That's what I think.
Do that 2 weeks in a row. Do that 2 weeks, you know, two weeks in a row, right? Just have a match going on and people run in and beat them up. I mean, it's logical, but it also would not be good.
Yeah,
the Viking Raiders are heels, but they'd be in the right. You know, they shouldn't be excluded. So you would be sympathetic with them. Like, that's not good booking. So I don't want to criticize them for something they didn't do, but preemptively, that would not be good. I'll just say that, if that's the thought. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, when Toxic Attraction had their match with Aaliyah and Raquel, they had the pre-tape where they said, well, they would have met us in the semifinals if it wasn't for our injury or whatever. So I feel like the purpose of that and the purpose of Aaliyah and Raquel beating them was just to prove that, yes, they should have won the tournament and they would have made it to the finals and whatever. And then on Monday, they're probably going to lose to Dakota Kai and Io Sky, I would imagine. But that's
craving.
The only reason I can.
And Matt, you're coming up with good reasons for this, and I think I'm not alone. Kelly, I don't think you're alone. I think wrestling fans crave explanations, justifications, backstory, a density of reasoning, where it seems like the promoter has bothered to think about the things that the viewer, who isn't just passively half-watching while looking at their phone and they just want to see a cool high spot or their favorite wrestler, you know, hit a big move or cut a promo. Like, people are really invested and this should be rewarded. It makes sense. Have density and layers to the decisions that are made and hold yourself accountable for things. And I just think it would make a better product. And it's something I was hoping for, Kelly, from Paul Levesque, because I think that was more a part of what we got in AEW, in NXT.
Yes, the match finishes. And
The density and layering of explanations for everything. For instance, why the Viking Raiders weren't in a match. Give us a reason. Explain it.
Yeah, it did seem like a lot of those little things were done well. I think a major reason for that, going back a few years, is that they were only doing four, sometimes as many as six takeovers a year. And they took the time and they got there in a more organic way, and it didn't feel like there was this constant churn to turn out these multi-person matches that feel so inconsequential and unearned. You actually could take the time to make it feel like that spot had been earned by telling a multi-week arc, because you had the time to do so. And then the Wednesday Night Wars happened, and they started doing a very special episode of NXT, like sometimes 2 weeks after the last one, often 2-3 weeks after the last one. And there was no time to do anything but throw them together with these crappy multi-person matches.
All right, cool. I appreciate the call, Matt. Any quick closing words?
The only other thing that I wanted to ask you guys was, do you think that having, because I'm sorry, I'm just not a big fan of Hit Row at all. Do you think that having the Street Profits being paired with them is defining Dal Montez Ford at all, knowing that he's somebody that, you know, hopefully is going to get a singles push at some point? And then, as you guys were saying at the beginning of the show, why have them have three guys from the Bloodline already out there and have the Street Profits run in on the match, not have that affect the actual outcome of the match, and then have Karrion Kross just end the match by choking out Drew and, you know, the Black and White? So those are the other two points I wanted to make. Mainly, is it smart to have Montez Ford rubbing with Hit Row like that? And other than that, go VIP.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's defining Montez down. I mean, I think we're at a point where the longer he's in the tag division just as another guy, you know, they might be getting to the point where they might not be striking at an ideal time to have him break out. But you don't want to do it just to do it if you think there's better timing, you know, 2 or 4 or 6 months from now. But I wouldn't wait a lot longer. But I don't think Kelly having right now the Street Profits and Hit Row side by side is hurting anyone involved. What do you think of that in particular, and then also just Hit Row in general?
Yeah, I don't think that's a problem at all. And Hit Row gets a fairly decent reaction, so I don't even know why that would be a consideration. Hit Row right now, though, is going to confound a lot of people. When they were a faction in NXT, and there were a ton of factions at the time, they were my favorite one. But that is because Shane Strickland was carrying the load, by far the most of the load, and that was able to mask some of the issues. Top Dollar only had to do his big man cleanup spots on a pretty rare occasion. And Ashante the Adonis, who I think is fine, would go in there and he would do his thing and he would fly, but it always was grounded by Strickland, who could work in a lot of different ways. He is one of my favorite wrestlers in the world, and he was everything Hit Row is. I never even considered that they might bring back Hit Row without Swerve. Isaiah Scott, they called him, but Swerve. I didn't think they would ever bring that back without him. So now I'm trying to recalibrate, like, do I still like this act, or is it really dead in the water without Swerve?
Yeah. I think that is a valid concern, and I think we're pretty early along here. We'll see. I mean, it's part of, you know, Paul Levesque just fortify the roster and try to right some wrongs. But they don't seem to be, they seem to be masking them a little bit in how they're featuring them at this point. 310, I know you had pushed one and then you unpushed it. Was that a mistake? Because if Erica 310 wants to join us, push one and we can sneak in, but maybe we already covered your topic. It looked like a newer caller, so I wanted to point that out. Hector from Chicago emailed. He said, I'm disappointed Shayna Baszler didn't win the title. However, Ronda Rousey mentioning for Shayna to find her when she's ready to break limbs gives me hope she's going to still be a factor when she lets loose. So, we talked about Shayna earlier. I hope they have a plan for her, and I think Ronda and Shayna are a good mix. And were you a little surprised at how Shayna's loss to Liv?
I wasn't surprised. I thought that this would just lengthen Liv's. I mean, I didn't think that she was a 0% chance challenger, but I thought this was to fortify Liv's run a little bit if they could, and they would have time for more with Shayna down the road if they wanted. And to me, this scene, it seems like this don't happen by accident. There weren't a lot of backstage scenes on this period. So the fact that they gave this time means that they have something significant in store, I would think, for Shayna.
I thought Ronda came across good here. This is like a good segment for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is, and maybe she's just so comfortable because she's in there with somebody she really knows. I don't know what makes this enigma tick, but whatever they did today, do that for her next time.
Hector from Chicago also says, in interest of equal time, given my rants on the show, he goes, as far as the main event, Solo star. Great debut, presented and talked about like a world beater. I'm glad Karrion Kross attacked Drew. Solo doesn't get a loss. Drew can branch off to Kross, and it was a cool ending with a fade to black line and the screen going black. So an endorsement there. And I get, you know, some people think it, hey, this avoided a lot of hard decisions and problems, and it had a purpose. And I'll give them credit for it having a purpose. You know, you finally have pulled the trigger on Drew and Kross, which steers Drew away from Solo Sikoa when he might otherwise want to finish getting revenge on him. I get all the rationale for it. I'm not denying there's not rationale for it, including the rationale for, wouldn't it be cool if we did a black and white screen? I just resent the idea that Karrion Kross needs all this stuff. Like, just find somebody who doesn't need all this stuff and go with that person instead. And then the idea of it's just kind of stupid. But I mean, we went through this with The Fiend, too, and the special lighting and all that. So it's not, like, unprecedented. So I understand point by point by point. And if the announcers had just acted upset the match that we didn't get to see the end of the match and they owned that, I'd be 50% better about this. I want the feeling that somebody on that show cares when a match just doesn't come to a conclusion. I just want that to matter within the canon of WWE, and it doesn't, and it ought to. But I understand why they did what they did, but it doesn't make it not a cop-out ultimately in the end. So basically, don't do this again for 2 months. You know, or maybe four, and then it's, you know, and then it's certainly more fine. I just don't want it to be a pattern. Kelly, anything else you want to add about this or anything else before we sign off here?
I think we pretty well covered it. I don't remember the end, the beginning of that email, because it got bogged down in the rant, and I feel much the same. I gave them half credit because I thought that I was seeing a disqualification, but you're right. There's no reason that, that specifically should have been a disqualification in favor of anybody. So, yeah, let's go with 4 months.
Okay, cool. I can live with that. Kelly, tell people about your shows before we close out here.
I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. I am the host of PWT Talks NXT on the Torch and the VIP show NXT 8 years back. We just covered TakeOver Fatal 4-Way, which was a really good two-match show, and then the stuff other than those two matches was really quite terrible, but at least memorable. So listen to us talk about one of the better Fatal 4-Ways you'll ever see.
Awesome, Kelly. How can people follow you on Twitter?
At Spooky Milk on Twitter.
And people can follow me at The Wade Keller. And they can follow our brand at PW Torch. Go VIP, everyone. PWTorch.com/GoVIP. Subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast. Search PW Torch and subscribe for free. While you're at it, when you see the black and gray logo, click that for free, and you'll get some free samples of our VIP shows. And then you can also, with a single click, if you're using the Apple Native app, using your Apple account, go VIP and get our VIP shows on that feed. It's super simple, frictionless, as they say, in the marketing business. So subscribe to both shows that pop up when you search PW Torch. Thanks, Kelly. It's always a blast talking wrestling with you. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and let's do it again soon.
Absolutely.